This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, left language at my ex-boyfriend's sister's house about 12 years ago. People are still talking about it. This episode is the first of a pair about the Icelandic language, the challenges it's currently facing, and how new words are coined for it and added to the lexicon. Because there's an official process. It's not like English, where nobody decides whether or not a new word is allowed. The words just catch on or they don't. Ugh, which is how we wound up with webinar. On with the show. The Icelandic language is spoken by about 320,000 people, most of them in Iceland, a few thousand in Denmark, and smattering elsewhere. It evolved from a Western Norse dialect after Norwegians settled in Iceland towards the end of the 9th century. And although it diverged from Norwegian language thereafter, Icelandic has stayed recognisably similar to its earlier form for many centuries, particularly since 1780, when students proposed a policy of linguistic purism to protect Icelandic language from the encroachment of words from other languages, such as Danish, French and English, and to weed out the ones that had already landed there, replacing them with words constructed from Icelandic elements or repurposed old words. In 1964, the Icelandic government established the Icelandic Language Council, and in 1985, the Icelandic Language Institute, which is now part of the Árni Magnússon Institute for Icelandic Studies. These organisations are tasked with advising on language, providing guidelines, and dealing with questions from the public, and deciding new vocabulary in Icelandic.
My name is Ágústa Þorbjörnsdóttir. I'm a project manager at the Institute.
My name is Jóhannes B. Sigtryggsson, and I'm an assistant research professor at the Institute and the Language Planning Department, and I'm mainly specialist in orthography and things like that, but also, like Ágústa, work in parts on terminology.
Language planning also.
So what kind of things does language planning cover?
The most important thing is maybe what is Augusta's main job is the working with terminological committees in many special fields, for example engineering or sports and or chemistry, yeah. Or whatever. Work with specialists in each field and try to make terminological lists of their fields. Translations of these common words that are used, special words used in these different fields. And this is a part of language preservation and planning because we are helping people to find Icelandic words for usually English words that that are used in many of these fields.
We can say the official language policy, Icelandic is usable and used in all fields of society. In one sentence.
Yeah. That's a big job.
How many people are on the committee?
That's different.
Yeah, there are many committees.
Yes, but very many. Yeah.
They can't be from just one person or two, yes. Maybe 10 or
something. Yes, that's unusual.
Unusual, yeah.
3-5 persons, it's usual.
Is it difficult to agree?
No. It's a voluntary work.
Yeah, and some of them have incredible history. For example, in electrical engineering committee, it has worked for 80 years and people have met, at least in earlier years, met once every week. Didn't get anything for it. Published 15 volumes of translations and people thought it was their duty for the language. This was a new field that they exerted themselves on this, and it is very difficult, for example, in fields like electric engineering, because there are of course a lot of international words that go, for example, like radio or signal or something, but people didn't want to use these international words. So for example, signal is used in nearly every language for signal, but we have merki. This is an Icelandic word for it.
Yeah, the word for television is sjónvarp. It is combined of two words, sjón, vision, and varp, from the verb verpa.
Sure. To throw.
Really. Throw.
Yeah, yeah. Throwing of sight or vision. Uh-huh. That's television. Yeah.
So quite a literal translation of the Latin and Greek, isn't it?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yes.
Exactly. Garage is bilskur. It's from bil or bil, that's a car. And skur is a shed.
Makes sense.
Yes, and so it's easier for us to understand than alone words.
These words are calques, translating the parts of the word as it is in the other language. They're also compounds, uniting two words, although not blending them. Icelandic doesn't make many portmanteau words. There are a few, though, such as the word for computer, tolva, made from the word tala, meaning a number, and bolva, a female seer.
The seeress, the mysterious seeress. So, yes, it's probably a portmanteau where you put tala and vulva together. So it's a number that see into the future, really, or something like that.
Seems like a very creative choice for a computer to be a seer.
Yeah, and usually these learned neologisms like tolva are made in these committees, not by maybe the common man. It's because they are sometimes used words that are archaic in Icelandic and or less common. Usually these words like that are not made by just happenstance. It's often made by the committees.
And your example is rotskýring or mansplaining.
Yeah, it was a brilliant word because there was a lot of discussion about mansplaining, pretty common in most societies.
The Icelandic word for mansplaining translates as ramsplaining. Like the original, it's a portmanteau, but there's also a bonus pun in there.
It can be rútur, ram, and explaining.
The word for explanation is útskýring. So you add in front of it H and R.
H, R, that's Mr. Explaining.
becomes rútskýring.
Útskýring, Mr. Herra útskýring.
And rútur also means ram, a male sheep and so on. So it's in many ways it's a very funny word.
What's the internet called in Icelandic?
Internet.
Oh no, I'm sorry. A loan word crept in.
Yes.
Loan words are of course very common also.
Yes, we have many loan words.
But there were some suggestions around 2000 or before 2000 when the internet became famous. For example, Lidnet was one suggestion, yes, made from, of course, the last part, net, or net, and Lidr, like in population, Lid, like in, we have the word Lidræði, which is democracy in Iceland. It's Lidr is the people, and Ræði is to choose or decide themselves. Really.
Well, some people use the word alnet, but not so.
No, so there are often many examples or such numerous suggestions for new things.
Yes.
These common things like when the mobile phone came, there were 20 or 30 suggestions.
Yes. Also for app.
What did you choose?
App. But we had maybe 40
suggestions.
Yes.
It fits well in Icelandic, app, and you can, in plural, it's app. Mm-hmm. So it's, you can conjugate it and decline it and so on. But the problem is it is becoming harder in later years to, if you're not quick to find a short and good word. For these new things, then it becomes very difficult. In different fields, you have to get the specialists in each field that know the system, because you don't not only have to find Icelandic words, but you have to think about them in a whole system of terminological systems or branches. But it's not possible to do that except if you're a specialist in the field.
What do you do when a loan word is being used quite widely instead of the Icelandic word? How do you promote Icelandic vocabulary when there are all these loan words coming in all the time?
Well,
we spread the terms in a special term bank.
Yeah, it's called Íðorðabankinn.
Yes, it's in Icelandic.
Icelandic term bank.
And everyone can send a new word.
Everyone?
Yes, everyone.
Wow. So there's a term bank where people can find all the formal words that the dozens of different committees coin for such things as technical work. But there is another site with words submitted by the populace for common things that they think Icelandic needs a term for.
In the term bank, the terms are the terms from the terminological committees. But the other one is from...
The population. And so it's very interesting to see how people think about this, and many are very proud of their words and so on. But so people can look at this, it is open and so on, and some of them become common immediately, as the word hrútskýring I mentioned.
Yes.
But it has been a problem spreading the knowledge about new words often.
What form did the term bank take before it was a website? Was it a printed in books, or?
Yes, it was printed in books.
For example, in the electrical engineering, they published 15 volumes of electrical engineering words.
Yes.
And there was also published books in many other fields, like in bílorð, car words, and so on.
Yes.
But in many fields, nothing was published really until the website came around. Then people could put their words there, and it was a centralized
website. The website is from 1997.
One thing that sometimes happens with the new vocabulary for specialist fields is that booklets are published with lists of the words, and they're distributed to university students.
The best thing is to get the word lists to the students that become the scholars that write about these things, of course, so they can write about it also in Icelandic.
But, write about it, talk about it, use the words.
People also come to the language planning department when they need help coming up with a new word, or they're having trouble finding a translation that suits. Of course, it can be hard to please everybody.
Mm. Yeah, it can be difficult, and often this is a common refrain when people see words that these committees make, is that they are too long or too complicated and something. And people usually say that, why can't you make a very short word?
And also transparent.
But also transparent. You can see every meaning of every constituent word. And that's difficult to do. People mention words like tölva and sími for telephone.
And also now commonly used to mean mobile phone, an abbreviation of farsími, wherein the far means to move.
Or þyrla. For a helicopter.
From the verb to swirl.
Þota for a jet plane.
From a verb to rush.
But these words are anomalies, because it's very difficult to make these short words that contain all the meaning or somehow. But you try to make a word that is as short as possible, of course, but there must be some reference or connection to the meaning, of course. And this is really, it can be an art form trying to do this, of course.
Are the people ever angry at the committees about words that they want to use and can't, or words that you've introduced and they don't like?
No.
But the problem is more that the spreading of knowledge about the words is always an uphill battle, I think. Even though we have the booklets and the websites and so on, it's difficult. And also, there's a lot of teaching in English, at least in some fields. So some teachers don't think they need to use these words, because they're always teaching in English and so on. So it's an uphill battle.
What other things do you do to keep the Icelandic language alive if it's an uphill battle?
At the department here, we also published orthographical dictionaries, and we have a website with education about language instructions, about correct language, if you may, and so on. So, but we also work with or help the Icelandic Language Council, which is a as a committee that more broadly thinks about language policy, you can say, and publishes language policy documents and helps the government making language laws, like there were, for example, in 2011 were first language laws published in Iceland.
What kind of things were those for?
For example, before that, there hadn't been anything in the laws or about the status of Icelandic, because people didn't think it was necessary to say anything, because Icelandic was the the substrat that we didn't really think about. But now, for example, it says in the laws that Icelandic is the language used in government and in courts and other official business and so on. So that's the thing that protects the language. People thought at that time that it was necessary to mention that Icelandic was the language of the country. But earlier that, its position was so stable that people didn't think about it. It says something.
What happened to make it unstable and when?
I think it's mainly the influence of this computer revolution, of course, internet. Also, in the last 40 years, probably, has been an enormous influx of shows and movies from America and so on. So, yeah, but also in later years, it has been also the tourist boom. There has been a lot more tourists than before, and with them have come a lot of foreigners working here, of course, and there have arisen, of course, many problems with that, because how to get Icelandic, for example, on the main streets. There's a lot of signs here on English and to get people to learn Icelandic that work here and so on. From many, many sides, it's not one thing.
The influence of English has grown in recent years, yes.
Has it been difficult to keep people speaking Icelandic rather than foreign languages like English?
Do you mean the population,
people? The population,
Not normal people.
No.
The population, yeah.
Yeah, what is normal? Who knows?
Well, there have been some studies in very recent years of the influence of English, for example, on children and this digital influence from the phones and the internet and so on. And there are some signs that Icelandic is weak, very weak, with the younger population. Youngsters even sometimes speak English between themselves, at least in spurts. Yes. So that doesn't sound good.
No.
It is cool to use English speaking with your friends and so on.
But I think it's
part of it maybe.
Yes,
but
part of it, it's cool. They use YouTube, see Netflix, use iPads with English and don't read many books.
Are you worried about Icelandic, or do you think it'll be okay?
Maybe a little worried, yes.
Yeah, it's a dangerous period now, I think.
You need an Icelandic person to invent the next Netflix so that then all the kids are using that instead.
Yeah, that's one thing that is a big problem is, for example, Netflix and Hulu and all this. Icelandic television, you have these subtitles everywhere. In Netflix and these things, international things, they are often very often lacking subtitles for Icelandic. You don't think about it if you're an English-speaking person, but there is lacking a lot of languages in this. And you can always get an English subtitles, but rarely for Icelandic. And the culture minister has written to Apple and Netflix and voiced her displeasure about this. But here maybe automatic translation could help later. But at least we could get some basic translation and everything in Icelandic. It's also the government has put a lot of money in recent years into a language technology project where they have put a lot of money into making these corpora, these text databases and all the things, and also producing automatic translators and correction software and so on. So there are a lot of specialists working on this exactly now, and hopefully this will help, because in the beginning this was all doom and gloom, but if we can get through the worst hurdles with this and get all these basic things correct, then these language technology software and so on will help the language if it can be put to use. So in the beginning it was difficult for Icelandic, but if we can get through this, then the language technology should help. The problem is, of course, as you mentioned, we are only 300 and something thousand, but we have to build the infrastructure, which is very labor expensive and costs a lot of money to make these corpora that make the automatic translations possible or things like that. So this is a problem. You can look at it as Iceland, there are very, very few people that live here, but it's a large country. It's 103,000 square kilometers, and we have to build roads through the country, but we are only 300,000. It's a lot of roads and infrastructure for this, and it's the same with the language. We have to build the infrastructure for the future, and it doesn't cost much less than for English than doing this. So this is a problem.
Although the Icelandic writing system is mostly the Roman alphabet, it has a few characters that programmers tend not to take into account, such as vowels with diacritics on top, and the letters Ash, Thorn and F. Ash is the one that looks like an A and E stuck together. Thorn is like if lowercase p and b refused to get out of each other's way. And F is a curvaceous D with a crossbar. Thorn and F are both th sounds. English used to have those letters too, but when the printing press arrived in England from mainland Europe in the 15th century, it wasn't set up for those characters, so they were replaced with other letters, such as Y. Hence, any shop sign that reads Ye Old Shop is actually The. And all these hundreds of years later, technology still has it in for Thorn and F, because programming tends to happen using the English alphabet. So how do you use Icelandic online when, if you tried to use a thorn in a web address, you'd break the internet, but not in the sexy way?
That's mainly concern the, for example, names of websites and things like that, the indies, or in programming languages. We don't have, of course, the Icelandic special letters, but we can use Icelandic letters in on the net, of course, and everything connected to that. And there was a battle in the 1980 something. There was some standard organization that decided what signs or letters should be in the, I think, ASCII or in the ANSI or some of these code sets. And there was a battle that some Icelanders fought for keeping Thorn and Eð in the basic, small, simple set. We had to fight for that, and then some, I think, Turkish symbols were ousted or something instead of them. Because there is a limited number of symbols that could fit in this older character sets, but with the Unicode now, there is a nearly infinite number of symbols that can be in that. So that's no problem anymore. But the biggest problem is domains, preserving, for example, that Icelandic is used in computer science, because it has been shown in studies that if a language loses domains, then it's very difficult to turn back.
It would be pretty sad if a couple of decades of domains rendered Icelandic obsolete. The language has hung on for such a long time in the same form that Icelandic people today can read texts from many hundreds of years ago.
Yes, we can.
You can say it's the same language.
Morphological.
At least the pronunciation has changed and so on, but the structure and declensions and everything has kept mostly the same through all centuries. When people talk about Icelandic, it's like a small language. It's not totally true, because as you mentioned, we can understand with very little difficulty old text from the beginning of writing in Iceland. So I can read one of the older manuscripts from around 1200 fairly easily.
Yes.
And this makes it so that Icelandic is so if you think of Icelandic as the language of Icelanders through the centuries, then it becomes a much larger language than just people that live now. So this is there's some axis that we have to think through centuries. So we are in unity with all Icelanders from the beginning, really. So this is amazing. And if the language becomes lost, it would be a terrible shame. We will lose this close connection with older generations, but also for the culture of the world, because we are really speaking a living old language, which is nearly as if we still had people speaking Latin as a mother tongue. So it would be a shame. But the problem is some Icelanders look at the language as this artifact or archaic thing. And in our work and the work of the Language Council, we are trying to get it to show that it's not only that, it's also a living language that is very useful and very complete.
You heard from Augusta Thorbergsdottir and Johannes Beer Sigtrason from the Arni Magnusson Institute for Icelandic Studies. In next episode, we go further into how this all works, plus an update on what we talked about 3 years ago in the Name versus Law episode about Icelandic naming customs. So return for that. The Illusionist is an independent podcast bobbing around in the turbulent seas of online content. If you like this show, tell someone about it. I love it when you do that. I feel awkward doing it myself. I was having an eye test the other day and the optician asked me what I do for a living, which is always a bit cringe for me because when you say you're a podcaster, a lot of people immediately think that what that is you sit in your garage shouting self-indulgently for 3 hours because you love the sound of your own voice. A, I don't have a garage. B, I hate the sound of my own voice. There are many different kinds of podcaster. Anyway, the optician said she was going to recommend The Illusionist to her mum, who's an English teacher, and then showed me some nice pictures of my retinas. Please do recommend the show to someone who you think might enjoy it. Pictures of retinas, optional. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is... Juke. Verb. Scottish and Northern English. Turn or bend quickly to avoid something. J-O-U-K. Juke. Try using juke in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman. The music is by Martin Austwick of palebirdmusic.com and the experimental podcast Neutrino Watch. Our ad partner is Multitude. To sponsor an episode of the show in the new year, contact them at multitude.productions/ads. You can find The Illusionist at Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Illusionist Show. And we also got our lovely little mini hangout at patreon.com/illusionist. If you sign up for as little as $2 a month, then you get behind the scenes info about the show. Plus, patrons have had a tour of Iceland's museums via me. Because if I learn how dolphins masturbate, then so do patrons. The Icelandic Phallological Museum was very informative. And a bit harrowing. And to hear or read every episode of the show, see the full dictionary entries for the randomly selected words, obtain merch such as the new Potato Fugue State sweatshirts, and to browse a lexicon of all the words ever covered in the show so you can find the relevant episodes about them, visit the show's forever home, theillusionist.org.